The opinions expressed on the Rob Report are the opinions of the host, participating callers and or listener emails, text and or letters, and are not necessarily the opinions of WDAY or Forum Communications.
I want a girl with a mind like a diamond. I want a girl who knows what's best. I want a girl with shoes that cut and eyes that burn.
Good afternoon, Rapport, 970 WDYM, 93.1 FM, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. That's how you participate in the show. And, you know, I think we're going to talk ballot measures today. We're going to get into it. I put up a post. I've actually had, over the past week or so, a bunch of people get in touch with me. And obviously, I mean, I've been weighing in on the ballot measures since back when they were being circulated for signatures. So I'm sure you could probably guess how I'm going to vote on the measures. But people have been emailing me and asking me, saying, hey, would you go over the measures? Would you write something up? Would you talk about them individually, each one, and just kind of give us a rundown? And we're at that point. In fact, we're probably past that point because I was looking on the Secretary of State's website, Kyle, and over 45,000 people have already voted early in this election in North Dakota so far.
That's pretty great.
That's good. Yeah, it's a good start. People are saying we could be on track for a record-breaking pace. You don't normally see. I've even heard people sort of saying, boy, I wonder if we could beat the presidential election in 2016. Mm-hmm. You don't normally see that out of a midterm.
No, not really. I think it's a lot of it, you can put a lot of the weight right on measure three. I think a lot of people are coming out with that in mind.
Yeah, measure three and the Senate race, I think the two are the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
Have you voted early?
I have not. No.
You have not. I like going on election. I don't have any problem with
it. I'll go on election day, yeah.
I like going on election day. I just like the experience of it. I don't know if I'm old-fashioned or whatever. That's what I like. But I'm going to run down the measures, and I'd love to hear how are you voting? How do you feel about the measures? 1, 2, 3, and 4. We'll talk about that. Coming up a little bit later in the program, Justin Luke Riley from the Marijuana Accountability Coalition of Colorado. They are anti-Measure 3. They're going to be on the program. I've been trying to get arguments from both sides of that issue on the show pretty regularly. So I guess we're going to have another guest making the contra argument to Measure 3. He's on at 1. And then coming up at 1:30, Jesse Johnner, who is running to be Cass County Sheriff, is going to be on the program. We'll talk with him about his campaign. He's endorsed by Sheriff Laney. So that'll be interesting. We'll talk with him coming up at 1:30. Once again, your phone call, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. We can ask Mr. Johnner how he feels about Measure 3, too. You know, maybe, you know, his thoughts might be pertinent to the office that he wants to hold. In the meantime, have you been watching this Megyn Kelly thing at NBC News?
Well, I have. I know what she said. I've seen some clips. Yeah. I've seen the apology to her. I've seen all of that, I guess.
She's out. And apparently NBC News is on the hook for her $69 million salary.
Ooh. Gotta love those contracts.
They gotta pay her, yeah. So she's gone. And I guess there's word that she might be going back to Fox News. I have no idea. Wouldn't that be something, though, if she's working at Fox News and still getting paid by NBC? Wouldn't that be a heck of a thing?
69 million just to, you know, get out. I just wouldn't work.
It's like
with your family.
It's like in baseball when somebody cuts a player and then you still have to pay him the contract. Then they sign with another team and now you're paying them. There was a moment in Moneyball. What was that? I think it was when Billy Beane was talking to David Justice, right? And he's telling him, that's how much they like you. They're paying you however many million dollars a year to play for us. That's how they value you. Yeah, it was great. And that's what's looking like with the Megyn Kelly thing. And she made comments, if you haven't been tuned into this, she made comments about blackface. And it was a segment about political correctness around Halloween costumes, which is sort of the new Christmas wars, right? The Halloween costume thing. And so what she was questioning is, you know, why isn't it okay for a white person to wear blackface if they're doing it in a positive way? Like if you're wearing blackface you know, because you want to portray, I don't know, Black Panther from the Marvel movies. And so you as a white person put on blackface to portray him. She was basically like, well, why is that not okay? I mean, the intent is not negative. The intent is positive. And she might have a good argument if it weren't for the ugly history, like, of minstrel shows, right? I mean, that's why it's wrong. Because of the minstrel shows.
It's been decades since that has been appropriate. And it's not just been something recent.
Well, I'm not sure it was ever appropriate.
No.
I mean, if you didn't have the ugly history of the minstrel shows, then okay, maybe you have an argument. But the thing is you can't ignore that history. It's a real thing. And so a white person putting on blackface is hurtful and invokes that history in a way that a person of color dressing up like a white person does not. And you just can't ignore that. I mean, it's just kind of dumb to wonder, well, why is this bad? Well, it's pretty obvious why it's bad, Megan. That being said, I will posit this because what she said was stupid, but I don't think it was malicious, right? I don't think Megyn Kelly's a racist. I think maybe she was trying to be provocative and just ended up saying something dumb.
Right. I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
I don't think she actually thinks that, you know. I don't think she is a racist at heart. I think she just was kind of making a.
It didn't help in the case because she has a huge contract.
One.
Yeah, she has a huge contract with NBC News. She hasn't exactly gotten great ratings, and I think most of it because she's kind of. I mean, she rose to success in a different, like, in a highly partisan cable news network, and then went to the much softer news world of like morning talk shows. And be like that. I that seemed like an odd fit to me, and I think that probably explains her ratings. I will say this though, because she has been tough on NBC over the Me Too stuff. Both, you know, she's given a lot of attention to the issue, and by the way, she left Fox News amid a sexual harassment scandal. Not of her doing, as a victim, right? Roger Ailes was the perpetrator, but she left. She went to NBC News. She's talked a lot about the Me Too movement. She's been critical of her own network, highly critical of her own network, for allegedly spiking Ronan Farrow's original stories about Harvey Weinstein. She's been very critical of them for that. She's been very critical of Matt Lauer, for instance, right? You remember that creep who had a button on his door that could lock on his desk that could lock the door. I can't even imagine the ask for that, Kyle. I can't even imagine sitting down and being like, "Hey, handyman, I need you to install a Dr. Evil button on my desk that locks the door."
It's like a pulp button.
You're one step away from like opening a trap door and dropping them into the sharks.
Sharks,
right?
With lasers on their head.
Like, you're not that far from being a Bond villain at that point. I mean, that'd be embarrassed even to ask for it. Like, well, what do you need this for? Well, you know.
None of your business.
Yeah. Ugh, that's just gross. But anyway, I mean, she was critical. She's critical of her own network. I think if it weren't for that, I think she'd still be there. It's hard to say. There's a lot of variables. But you don't just walk away from that big of a con. Even with low ratings, you still try to use the talent, right? You still try to get some value out of it. They're just cutting her loose. And I think a lot of it has to do with she was critical of them and they didn't like it. And now she's gone. And I have a feeling she's going to land somewhere and she ain't going to shut up about NBC News. So that's going to be fun to watch for those of you who care about that sort of thing. All right. Now that I got that out of my system, let's talk about the ballot measures. Measures 1, 2, 3, and 4. I want to hear, if you want to, I wrote up a piece at sayanythingblog.com today if you want to read it. People have been asking me about this, and I'm not sure how I vote is all that important. But I think at this point, like, we went through the process of collecting signatures for these things. We went through the process. They're on the ballot now. We've been having a debate. There's been ads and everything else about them. Now it's time, I think, maybe to just put everything we know in one place and talk about it. How are we going to vote on these things? I'd love to hear from you. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk@wday.com. Now, I suppose we could start in order. I suppose that's the most logical way, and just start with Measure 1. Measure 1 is a constitutional amendment, a lengthy constitutional amendment, which on it sets my teeth on edge from the beginning. The state constitution is not supposed to be a place where we make minutely detailed public policy. The constitution is supposed to be a broad statement of policies and rights, with the minutia coming in statute. So I don't like already that we're putting this in the state constitution. That sets my teeth on edge to begin with. But second of all, my problems with Measure 1 is not that I'm necessarily opposed to policies that would make our government more transparent or policies that would make our government more accountable. I could think of numerous policies that we could enact that would accomplish those things, and some of them are even in Measure 1, some of the additional reporting requirements and whatnot. The problem is Measure 1 goes too far. It creates an ethics commission of political appointees. A lot of people just assume that these sorts of commissions will make our government more accountable. I don't necessarily know that that's true. In fact, I remember several years ago, North Dakota was ranked as one of the most corrupt states in the union. One of these left-wing advocacy groups had put out this ranking. And the reason why we were ranked that way is because we didn't have an ethics commission. And so they said we were one of the most corrupt states in the nation. One of the least corrupt states in the nation was New Jersey, according to this ranking, who has had multiple governors like go to jail. So they're less corrupt than us. They have an ethics committee, though. So I don't see the causal relationship between the presence of a bunch of political appointees who are investigating this stuff and more ethical government. I don't think it helps. So that's a problem. The other problem is the restrictions it puts on political activities and political speech, which no less than the ACLU objected to. I think this measure, if it passed, would be challenged by litigation and probably struck down in part or maybe even in whole. I don't know. But I'm voting no on it. But we're discussing the measures now, and I'd love to hear what you think. Measure 1, Measure 2, Measure 3, Measure 4. Call in. Tell me how you're going to vote. We're going to talk it out this first hour. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Rob Report, 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM. We are talking about the ballot measures today. Measures 1 through 4. I just talked a little. And by the way, I wrote everything up at sayanythingblog.com. And I tried to make the post useful, even if you don't agree with my conclusions about the measures. For each measure, I linked the actual text, the language you'll see on the ballot, as well as the fiscal analysis of each measure. So if you want to go there, there's some information. Even if you don't agree with me on the measures, there's some information there maybe you want to take into account. Let's see. Brad emails and goes, "Hey, Rob, I voted early and voted no, yes, yes, yes on the four measures. So I guess that's no on measure one and then yes on measures two through four." He said, "The first one just didn't make much sense to me, but the other three are no-brainers in my opinion. I've emailed you a few times before, and I listen to your show every day along with your two colleagues. I'm an independent voter that typically leans left, but this election I voted for Kevin for senator. I feel like I've gotten to know him quite well through all the times you've had him on your show. I've rarely heard anything from Heidi on any of the WDAY talk shows, and I almost never listen to KFGO. Kramer seems like a good fit for North Dakota, so at least for me, he gained a swing vote just for making himself available to the people so regularly and coming across as such a good guy that enjoys talking to all of us. Thanks. Have a great day." Thank you for the email. So Brad is no on one, yes, yes, yes on the other three. And I guess to continue our discussion now, we'll talk about Measure 2 a little bit. Now, Measure 2 is also a constitutional amendment, and I think it's the appropriate sort of constitutional amendment in that, again, I think the state constitution is supposed to be about a broad declaration of rights and values, and statute should take care of everything else. So Measure 2 makes it, you know, it amends Article 2, and Article 2 is the establishment of the voting franchise in the state of North Dakota. Appropriate topic, I think, for the constitution. It amends it, makes two small amendments to it to make it clear that only citizens can vote in North Dakota elections. Now, the knock on this is a lot of people saying, well, it's unnecessary. It's already illegal in statute, and they even argue that the current constitutional language prohibits non-citizen voting. And I could even buy into that argument, understanding that somehow how these things can be interpreted in the courts can be slippery. There are other people, including, by the way, a constitutional law professor from the University of North Dakota, who have agreed that the constitutional language may be a little vague. I'm not sure I entirely buy into that argument. And I will tell you that I wouldn't have given money to this. I don't ever make political contributions anymore. I haven't for years and years. But I wouldn't have given money to this measure. I wouldn't have supported it getting on the ballot. I wouldn't have collected signatures for it. But now that it's on the ballot, the changes it makes to the state constitution are minimal. I don't think they harm anything. And they're in pursuit of something I think most of us agree should be the case, which is that to exercise the voting franchise in the state of North Dakota, and indeed the United States of America, one ought to be a citizen. I say that with no ill will towards immigrants, only that we have a process by which you should become a citizen. And if you want to exercise the voting franchise, you ought to become a citizen. That's it. And I say that, by the way, as somebody who thinks it ought to be easier to become a citizen in the first place. I think legal immigration and obtaining citizenship in the United States ought to be easier than it is. But I don't want people who come here illegally outside of those processes to vote. If you want to vote, become a legal citizen. Full stop. So I'm going to vote yes on Measure 2. How do you feel about that one, Kyle? You know how you're going to vote on that one?
Well, I'm not sure who would it be. Would it be discriminating against anybody if it passed? I mean, are there people here that are...
Well, the big argument is that it's unnecessary because this is already illegal. I mean, mm-hmm. So the big argument against it is that it changes nothing, therefore it's unnecessary.
But if there are individuals that are in the process of becoming citizens but aren't necessarily citizens, are those people that are in that limbo process now, are they not going to be able to vote if this goes through?
Well, they wouldn't be able to vote anyway.
If
they're not citizens yet.
Technically, wouldn't be able to vote.
They would have to complete, and my understanding is they'd have to complete the citizenship process 30 days before Election Day.
Okay.
And nothing about that would change, because that's the residency requirement in North Dakota, you have to be a resident of North Dakota 30 days before the election.
But then, I mean, sure. I mean, it's...
And this, and by the way, this would change nothing.
Isn't that kind of redundant then?
Yeah.
To pass this would be redundant?
I mean, that's what people say. Now... People say that this is already illegal by statute and already illegal in the Constitution. Non-citizens already can't vote. And by the way, this would change nothing for this election, because obviously whether or not it becomes law is going to be settled on Election Day. But you're right. Now the counter argument is people say, well, in other parts of the country, some local municipalities have been able to, through a loophole, because their constitutional wording isn't thorough enough, have been able to legalize non-citizen voting. Now, this is rare. This has happened in probably like San Francisco, some pretty thoroughly left-wing places. Politically speaking, it seems deeply unlikely to be the sort of thing that would happen anywhere in North Dakota. Like, I can't imagine like Fargo or Grand Forks approving non-citizen voting for local elections.
So basically what this is doing, it's getting out ahead of the state becoming liberal, right, and doing something like a San Francisco. And
I guess
letting non-citizens vote
truth
in the
be
election,
told,
like this will just take that
truth,
out of the equation ever happening.
And if you want to tell me, I think it's a little bit of a honeypot for Trump voters too. Like it's a way to help Republicans with turnout. Honestly, I nobody's told me that explicitly, but I look at this and it's just
kind
of
makes sense, especially when it's very redundant. You're going to get people that. Well, I have to go vote yes on Measure 2, so I'm going to vote on the rest of the ballot, obviously.
I'm going to vote for it just because, I mean, I don't know that it's necessary. And again, I wouldn't have put any time or money into putting it on the ballot. But since it's there, I'm going to vote for it because I do think you should be a citizen to vote. And I guess if this makes it clear, then so be it. Not a huge issue for me. Love to hear what you folks... sorry, go ahead.
If you're going through the process and becoming a citizen... You know, you're eventually going to get the right to vote. You just have to do it within a time frame.
You just have to be a citizen.
So. Yeah.
And for this election, my understanding is you have to be a citizen at least 30 days before the election. Other than that, you can vote once you're a citizen.
Well, conversely, I mean, the people that are, if there are non-citizens that are voting, it usually isn't that to pad voting numbers?
I don't understand.
I mean, isn't that to get non-citizens... to be able to vote in a state election,
wouldn't
that be just absolutely directly just to pad votes for a certain candidate or a certain...
Yeah. Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, just as a... I think you should be a citizen to vote, though. I think the voting franchise should be reserved for citizens. Full stop. You want to vote? Become a citizen. And it should be easy to become a citizen. How do you feel? How are you going to vote on these? 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk@wday.com. We'll talk about Measure 3. This was probably the big kahuna on the ballot. Coming up next here on The Rob Report. Don't go away. Talking ballot measures today on The Rob Report, 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM. And I had a lot of people asking me about this. Just say, Rob, would you run through the measures and just tell us? And I think most of you could probably, I don't know that what I'm revealing here is for people who follow what I write or have listened to the show, how I feel about these measures is probably pretty clear. But somebody wanted me to just run down everything. So I wrote a post up at sayanythingblog.com, link to the actual text of the measures, link to the fiscal analysis, link to the language you'll actually see on the ballot for them. So all that information is there, plus my analysis and how I'm going to vote. And we're talking about it here as well. On the last segment, we talked about Measure 2, which is the non-citizen voting measure, which I think probably is redundant. I think it probably is unnecessary. I wouldn't have supported putting it on the ballot. But since it's there, I do think that I do think you should have to be a citizen to vote. And so I'm going to vote for it. I think it's a little unnecessary, but the changes are very small, and they're in pursuit of something I already support. So I'm going to vote yes on that. Emailer Scott asks, Rob, can dual citizenship people vote in United States and state elections? And the answer to that is yes, generally. Basically, what it breaks down to is if the United States government, if our government recognizes you as a citizen, then you're a citizen, full stop. It doesn't really matter what another country might view you, right? So if our government views you as a citizen, then you're a citizen. There's no like partial citizenship. Once you're a citizen, you're a citizen. Now, if Germany wants to say that you're also a citizen, then, you know, that's kind of up to Germany. But for the United States purposes, yes, if you're a citizen, you're a citizen. And then that would also work down at the state level. If you're a United States citizen, you know, the state of North Dakota would recognize that. Now, each state has different residency requirements for their votes. In North Dakota, it's very easy. You just have to be, you know, living in North Dakota for 30 days prior to Election Day. That's all we require. Other states may require more. You should check with those states. But, yeah, basically, if you're a dual citizen, you're a citizen. You know, if it doesn't really matter if you're a citizen somewhere else, too. If you're a citizen in the United States, then you're a citizen. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk@wday.com. All right, Measure 3, this is the big one, recreational marijuana. This one is probably, out of all the ballot measures, garnered the most debate. I'm going to be voting yes on Measure 3. Now, I say that understanding full well that there are problems with Measure 3. And they're not insignificant problems. And I think, frankly, some of the Measure 3 supporters have been, I think they've gone overboard in trying to downplay these problems because they are real. I think that the inebriated driving issue is real. If, the way the measure is worded, it says that we cannot make illegal marijuana-related activities. A plain reading of the law means if you smoke marijuana and drive, we can't make that illegal. Or if you smoke marijuana in front of your kids, we can't make that illegal. I don't know. I mean, if marijuana is going to be legal, should it be illegal to smoke a joint in front of your kids? I don't know, but I feel like we should be allowed to have that debate. I'm not sure Measure 3 allows room for that the way it's currently written. So there are problems, deep-seated problems with this measure. Also, the expungement provision, where we're going to go back and we're going to expunge the records of people who have been convicted of marijuana-related crimes that would be legal under this measure. I think it's confusing. I think it's going to be a nightmare to go back through some of these cases. I mean, remember, a lot of times when somebody is arrested for a marijuana-related activity, that's not the only charge that they've been arrested for. So how we're going to go back through, and now in these cases, we're going to have to try to hide only those parts of the criminal records that relate to the marijuana charge. I don't know how many thousands and thousands of court records. I mean, that's going to be a nightmare. That's going to cost an enormous amount of money. I wish the Measure 3 people hadn't put this in the measure. I understand what they're trying to do. They feel it's wrong that some people are, you know, their lives have been ruined because they've been charged for breaking a law, using a drug or having a drug that was illegal. But I think the expungement provision was confusing and unnecessary. I don't think it should have been in there in the first place. I wish they had left that part out because I think it's a distraction from the larger issue, which is why I'm going to vote for this measure, which is that I do believe recreational marijuana should be legal. You know, I wish Measure 3 was a better vehicle to that end. I think it's a deeply flawed vehicle, but it is a vehicle, and I would like to get us there because I think that this train is coming, and I believe that we should get ahead of it. I think recreational marijuana in all 50 states is inevitable at this point. In fact, we're down to just 4 states left that haven't legalized marijuana to one degree or another. I think, what is it? Is it 7 or 8 states now, Kyle, that have legalized recreational marijuana, or at least decriminalized?
Yes.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm at. I'm going to vote yes just because it's going to get us there. But I think we need to modulate our expectations, knowing that the legislature is going to have to take this up. And people are going to bellyache, as like they bellyached about the medical marijuana measure. But when you put poorly worded measures on the ballot and they get approved, it is incumbent upon the legislature to fix it into workable policy. The marijuana measure was not workable policy as it was written, as it was passed on the ballot. Measure 3 is not workable policy as it is currently written. I think it should pass. And unfortunately, this is why, and honestly, Measure 3 is why I do not like the initiated measure process to begin with. This is a poor way to make public policy. But I think that the problems that are created by the ongoing prohibition of marijuana outweigh those other complications, outweigh those other problems. Measure 3, recreational marijuana should be legal, if only because it's the current prohibition of recreational marijuana isn't really stopping anybody. Right? I would hazard to guess. I mean, the market, even in North Dakota, the market for recreational marijuana is so large and so strong that the people serving it, the dealers serving it, are probably more ubiquitous in our state than grocery stores. It's everywhere. We're not stopping it. And I would rather deal with this problem out in the light. Right? We tried to deal with alcohol by driving it underground. And what did that do? Well, the people who got rich were violent gangs. And it didn't really stop boozing anyway. If anything, it made a joke out of law enforcement. If anything, it made a joke out of the law. Those are dangerous things. When we have a law on the books that nobody really respects, or at least a very sizable faction doesn't respect anymore. Look at our popular entertainment. Right? We went from, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, marijuana users were, depicted, laughably as these like dangerous, villainous criminals. Today they're lovable, right? Which is probably a more healthy point of view on it. I'm not entirely healthy. I think sometimes the stoner movies are a little bit too laissez-faire in their depictions of addiction, even with marijuana. Even marijuana can be abused, trust me. I think sometimes people have portrayed it as though it can be used irresponsibly, believe it or not. But we've gotten to a point where it's accepted. It's accepted. Nobody believes those tired old tropes about, marijuana frenzy. And by the way, we're going to be discussing this more. A guy who opposes Measure 3, Justin Luke Riley from the Marijuana Accountability Coalition in Colorado. I'm sure he'll disagree with me on a lot of this. But I think Measure 3 should pass, if only because marijuana prohibition has to end. It's doing more harm than good at this point, and whatever gets us there faster, even understanding that the legislature is going to have to go through a painful process of fixing this thing, whatever gets us there fastest is all right by me. And I'm assuming, Kyle, that's how you feel. Well, maybe not. Maybe that's not your justification for voting for Measure 3, but I know you support Measure 3.
I support Measure 3, and I just think that you have to send a message to the legislature that we want this passed. They're going to have to do some work on this measure to make it, working policy. But at the same time, if this gets shot down, then we can expect no decriminalization. We can expect no step toward recreational for a very long time.
Yeah.
And
yeah, well, that's the other thing, too, is if this Measure 3, if it fails, and that's why I wish it was better written. Because if this fails, you know, the political fallout's tough. It's tough to get people organized behind another ballot measure doing the same thing that a previous measure failed at doing.
Because what people don't understand is with the medical end, the dragging of the feet, and now we find out that there aren't a whole lot of doctors out there that are going to sign off for you to get medical marijuana anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah, which by the way is not the legislature's fault.
It's not.
By the way,
no, it's not.
Yeah, I also don't agree that I know this has been a bone of contention, but I don't agree that the legislature drug their feet either. I don't know what else they could have done. It's a lengthy process, I think the guy representing the company that got the first. That got the first license to be a dispensary or whatever. You know, they said that the process was actually pretty good compared to other states. So I don't know. I do think you're right, though, that the legislature had to be prompted on this stuff. I think the attitudes that are prevalent in the legislature about marijuana are out of step with the attitudes in the general public about marijuana.
I think
now, whether or not that'll
there's a lot of frustration that goes with it because people want it done quicker than it. They see it being, over 2 years, and really they still don't have their medical marijuana. And
yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
I understand that. I'm just not sure that that's enough to me to make those wheels turn faster. It's got, especially when we're operating under ongoing federal prohibition, I just don't know how you make it go faster and produce good, workable policy that, by the way, maybe could convince doctors that this is something they could start prescribing and that they're not just sending... pothead, it's not just a sham,
right?
I mean, it's got to be a good process for medical. But I think if you make recreational legal, maybe it takes a lot of the pressure off that. I don't know.
Well, I think you have to, just like we have to vote on this measure within the state, if enough states, I think, legalize it recreationally, then the federal government will wake up too.
Well, even people who... Congressman Kramer has been on this program. He is not voting for Measure 3. He does not support legalizing marijuana. He has what I feel are probably some outdated attitudes about marijuana. But even he is saying, I would support federal legislation to make the North Dakota's decision and not the federal government's decision. That's a sea change. I mean, that's a big step in the right direction. So that's a good thing. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk Measure 4 next year on Rob Report 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM. Don't go away. Welcome back, Rob Report. A few minutes left, and I don't know that we need a whole lot of time to discuss Measure 4. But Measure 4, essentially, it's a statutory change which would create a new driver's license. It'd be red in color. It'd be for volunteer first responders, so think people like volunteer firefighters. It would be free of charge, meaning essentially the benefit for our volunteer first responders is that they get to register their vehicles for free. Having the license plate would also entitle them to free access to our state parks. Now, I love our volunteer first responders. They give us a lot. They don't necessarily get a lot back. We also have trouble recruiting these volunteers. So if we can put a benefit in place that might make serving as a volunteer more attractive, well, then that's to the good. My problem with this measure is I'm not sure that this is the one, right? Is this the thing that we should do? There's a cost here that we shouldn't ignore. Combined cost and lost revenues to the DOT and the Parks Department would be about $17.7 million over the next decade. You're talking a little shy of $2 million a year in lost revenue estimated over the next decade. So that's a significant amount of money. And so my concern, Kyle, with Measure 4 is if we're gonna basically dedicate resources, and essentially we're taking resources away from the DOT and the Parks Department and giving them to first responders in the form of free park access and free vehicle registrations, is this the thing that they want? Or could we come up with something else? Maybe they want better training programs. Maybe they want more equipment. I don't know. Did anybody talk to the first responders about this? I mean, that's the conversation I would like to have before I vote on Measure 4. That's how I feel about it. Are you voting for this?
I am. Yeah, and I wouldn't be against paying a little bit extra to register my own vehicle.
Yeah, well, neither would I. I'm not against that.
To help out our first responders in that way.
Yeah. I would be willing to pay more. Whether we end up going to the state parks, I buy an annual park pass for the state parks every year because I support our state parks. I think they're wonderful. And obviously, I pay to register my vehicle every year because if you don't, you get arrested.
Exactly. So,
I would pay a little more for both. Mm-hmm. If for this benefit for first responders,
if it would cover this, I mean, yeah, where are we going to come up with the funds? As is.
See, but that's the thing.
Or can we increase, you know?
The parks run on user fees, and I worry about denying them funds. And already, our vehicle registration costs are very, very low. They're already not covering the nut at the DMV. So that's my problem. Is this the right thing to do? And is this even the benefit the first responders want? If they're going to get something, is this what they want? Or is there something else we could do? And to me, that's the big unanswered question here. I'm not sure that this is what they want. So what I would like to do is to vote no. And I've had some conversations with lawmakers to say that if this goes down, they're willing to take a look at this during the session and maybe flesh it out a little bit more or explore other ways that we could do more for our first responders. And I would expect the legislature to act because I do think we got to do something. We are having trouble finding volunteer first responders, volunteer firefighters and the like, you know, EMTs and all of those. We are having some trouble with that. And so if there's some things we could do to make that service more attractive, then I think we should explore doing it. I'm just not sure that this is the thing because this was some guy from Max North Dakota's idea to do something nice for first responders. I like where his head's at. I think the motivations are pure.
It's better than nothing.
And if the first responders told me that this is what they wanted, then okay, I'm on board with it. I'm just not sure that question for me has been answered. So I'm a no on this. I'm a no on this one. I'm going to vote no just because I'm not certain.
There should have been more consulting with first responders is what you're saying.
That's how I feel. And I want to make sure that, again, we're talking, I mean, it's nearly $2 million a year we'd be dedicating to this. You know, and admittedly, it's not new spending. It'd be essentially we're taking revenues away. But those revenues would probably have to be made up. Whether it's through another appropriation or whether it's through raised, registration or park entrance fees. I don't know. But if we're going to do this, there's a cost. And I just want to make sure before we pay that cost that this is the thing that the first responders want.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of doing this. This is better than them not getting any kickback at all for their volunteering. But like you said, it comes at a cost. But then again, I just hope that they could work it out to where maybe they increase the prices of certain things, and then that can cover the cost for this.
Yeah. But if this, I mean, it's not going to break my heart if this passes. And if this passes, I would fully expect that our vehicle registration fees and our park entrance fees would go up a little bit. And I'd be okay with that because I could say, you know what, it's going up. We're all going to pay a little more to help out the first responders. I'd feel comfortable with that. So I'm not going to be upset if this passes. But to me, my default position on all of these measures is no, and I have to be convinced to vote yes. That's how I approach these measures. It's not incumbent upon me to prove that the measure isn't necessary. It's incumbent upon those proposing the measure to demonstrate to us that it is necessary or it is good. And I haven't. To me, the Measure 4 folks haven't crossed that threshold, mostly because I haven't heard from the volunteers. So anyway, hey, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about Measure 3. Justin Luke Riley, he's with the Marijuana Accountability Coalition in Colorado. He's going to be calling in. He opposes Measure 3. So we'll listen to his argument because you know what? It's important to get both sides on these issues. This is the Rob Report, 970 WDYM, 93.1 FM. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Wish I was home again, sipping my wine. Welcome back. We're up 4970 WDYM 93.1 FM 701-293-9000 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. 701-293-9000 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. We should be talking about Measure 3 a little bit more here in a moment. Justin Luke Riley from the Marijuana Accountability Coalition of Colorado is supposed to be calling in here. Hopefully he'll call in shortly. In the meantime, during the break, I spent a little bit of time looking a little bit more into the Megyn Kelly thing because it's just everywhere right now, and it's kind of remarkable for how sudden it is. I started off the program because I had read her comments. I during the break I went and listened to them, and I think it's kind of interesting. I think the question she asked has an obvious answer, right? White people shouldn't wear blackface. I believe that. The minstrel show legacy is enough. You just shouldn't do it. It's offensive. I don't like it. It's not something I would ever do. That being said, the question she asked is whether or not a white adult can dress up as a black person, a celebrity or historical figure or whatever, I guess, in order to sincerely honor them. Do you think that's an unfair question to ask? Like if we're having a debate about Halloween costumes, is it unfair to just even ask that question? I guess I don't know. Would it be unfair to ask the question, is this Halloween costume okay? Well, why is this okay? I mean, I realize that for a lot of people, there's an obvious answer. No, it's not okay. But I mean, she just asked the question. And again, there's a lot of other stuff going on with the Megyn Kelly thing, right? I mean, there's a lot of other stuff. I mean, her ratings weren't great. It didn't sound like she was getting along with a lot of people there. I think there were some noses at a joint because she, you know, she was brought in on a rock star contract and leapfrogged a lot of people, then underperformed. You know, and then there was the whole thing that she insisted on holding her own network accountable for, you know, a lot of the way that they handled the Me Too thing. Right? You know, supposedly there was pressure that brought to bear, allegedly, to not break the Harvey Weinstein story. So there's a lot going on there. But I guess I'm getting back. What bothers me is, as I read more about her comments and I listen to them during the break, Kyle, is she asked a question. Is that so bad? I mean, should you lose your job for asking a question like that?
But I guess she's insinuating by asking the question. I think that's, I don't know.
Like if it was my show, I'm on the show and I'm just saying, well, is it bad if a white person wants to dress up as an African American or a person of color who's a celebrity and they're doing it because they like that person? And the intent is not to demean them or belittle them or whatever. They just want to dress up with them. Like maybe you want to dress up as Black Panther, right? Who's obviously, I guess I don't know the actor's name, but obviously portrayed by an African-American man. If you wanted to do that, you're doing it in a positive way and you're not mocking him. Is that bad?
But in that situation, there's also a full suit that the guy wears. So you could be wearing a mask and it wouldn't really...
Yeah. And you wouldn't necessarily be putting on.
You wouldn't know.
Face.
Yeah, you wouldn't.
I guess. Yeah, still, I mean.
But say, I mean, if you wanted to be, I don't know, you wanted to be Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're non-African American and you're going to be Michael Jordan for Halloween and you're going to do blackface, that is wrong, in my opinion. Even if it is in a positive light.
Yeah. See, I mean, and
just
that's
because
my
of
answer.
History.
See, and that's my answer to the question as well. I could tell you, I would never do it. I'm not putting on blackface because I understand the history behind it. And I think even if I was doing it positively, which I would be because I am not a racist. But even, I mean, that's not, if I wanted to honor somebody that's not how I would do it. So I get the no answers. Like, I understand the answers. I even agree with it. That's my answer too. But the thing is that she didn't so much advocate a position. She just asked a question. And maybe if you got to the point, and this is not the position that I agree with, but even if you got to the point where you said, gosh, I think maybe it would be okay if a white person wanted to do this because they're doing it in a positive way. As much as I may disagree with it, and even if Megyn Kelly was advocating that position, should she lose her job for it? Right? I mean, because she's fired abruptly. And by the way, fired faster than Matt Lauer was fired after his revelations. You know, Harvey Weinstein lingered longer at his company than Megyn Kelly is lingering at NBC. I just don't know. I don't know. I agree that white people should not wear blackface under whatever their intent. I agree. I mean, that's my position. But I'm wondering, you can't even ask the question before you get unpersoned? Right? I mean, even just asking the question immediately gets you fired? That seems weird. That seems I don't know. There's something worthy of comment there about where our priorities are. I think that's a little odd. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. Let's see. Joe emails, talking about our ballot measure discussion in the last segment. Joe emails, regarding Measure 4, I fail to see the logic of our park fees would need to increase. I highly doubt a significant percentage of the first responders were paying for every state park's fee in the first place, so any loss of revenue is also insignificant. If we were to increase their pay by a couple hundred dollars, would you support it? Well, first of all, the information I got about the lost revenues for park fees was actually an estimate that came from the Parks Department. Part of the process around the ballot measures has to do with the they do fiscal impact reports, where essentially there's a process by which the affected state departments come into the legislature and they say, this is what we think. This ballot measure passes. This is what we believe it would cost us. Now, sometimes, I mean, that could be a fraught process. For instance, with Measure 3, the state health department came in and ludicrously said that the cost of Measure 3 was going to be millions, not because of anything that Measure 3 required, but because they assumed that we would have to do a multi-million-dollar public advocacy or a public service campaign in response to it. Now, that's not anything that's required by Measure 3. So saying that's the cost of Measure 3, I thought was a little ridiculous. But generally, the process is helpful. And there is a fiscal note for Measure 4, and the Parks Department says they would lose money. As a matter of fact, I'm reading. It says the fiscal. I'm reading now. This is a document that's posted on the Secretary of State's website. It says the fiscal note states the estimated revenue loss each biennium thereafter would total $3,520,000 per biennium, resulting in decreases in deposits to the Highway Tax Distribution Fund of $2.75 million in the Parks Department Operating Fund of $770,000. So they're talking about a biennial cost to the Parks Department of $770,000 per biennium. About, geez, what would that be? About $370,000 a year, perhaps, in that ballpark. So the loss in revenues is not insignificant for the Parks Department, and I don't think we should look at it. And I would support a pay increase to the volunteers. I want to talk to the volunteers and find out what they need first. That's why I'm opposed to Measure 4. Let's see. Caller, Ken from Fargo. You're on. What's up?
Yeah, just commenting on the whole Megyn Kelly thing. I mean, she made a comment from what I read, which was in the context of Halloween costumes. And you say blackface and minstrel shows, and I get that it goes there very quickly. But she was just talking on a talk show. And the next day, she apologized. Now, and she lost her job, essentially. If you don't think that, and NBC can fire her and she can go get a different job and that's fine, but if you don't think everybody takes notice and says, you know, I'm going to start getting out my 10-foot pole on anything that, you know, and then people wonder, well, why are we so far, why can't we have conversations? Why don't we talk frankly about things? And well, you know, here's case number, you know, 9,520 of somebody lost their job over something where you go, really? I mean, she wasn't advocating for it. She was just having a daytime talk conversation. And they came out and killed her, you know, figuratively.
Yeah. She what she did is she asked a question.
She posited a question.
Right. So her question was essentially, if a white person wants to dress up as a celebrity or a character, dress up basically as a person of color for Halloween. For Halloween. And they're doing it in a positive way. So not perpetuating some harmful stereotype, but just, right, I'm dressing up as this positive because I really like this character and I'm going to dress up as them. I don't understand what's wrong with asking that question. Now, for me, the answer is no. I would not do that. I don't think that you should.
I wouldn't send my kids out. I wouldn't. No, I don't advocate for it, and I can disagree with her. That's going to hurt some feelings or something.
Is asking the question a fireable offense? I don't think that it is. 701-293. Thanks for the call, Ken.
It is.
Yeah. Well, it is. Yeah, she got fired. 701-293. It is at NBC anyway. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDY.com. We'll keep the conversation going. Don't go away. You know, part of the problem I have about the Megyn Kelly thing, too, is the question she was asking is we're talking about a positive portrayal. Now, I think if you're wearing blackface to do a positive portrayal, that's insensitive. I think that's probably and it's a little tone deaf, more than a little tone deaf. We'll put it that way. But it's not in the same category with being an actual racist, right? I mean, it's not like, oh, I dressed up as a black superhero or a black celebrity and did it in a positive way because I admire this person for Halloween is not in the same category as marching down the street in a Ku Klux Klan hood. And yet some people are treating these things like they're equivalent. And I think that's unfortunate. I mean, Megyn Kelly lost her job for even just insinuating it. Now, I think there's other reasons Megyn Kelly lost her job. Her ratings weren't good, for one. There's just no getting around that. Also, she ruffled a lot of... I think it was a poor career move for her. I think she went and she tried to be Oprah DeGeneres at NBC, you know, doing their morning talk, light banter type stuff. That just wasn't her. I think that was a bad career move for her. She was never going to be that. That's not what she was good at. And so I think that's problematic for her. And also she held her own network accountable for a lot of the Me Too stuff, the way they handled it, you know, trying to spike the Harvey Weinstein story, the Matt Lauer situation. She was critical of her own network. I think those had a lot more to do with her getting fired than this blackface thing. But they're saying it's the blackface thing. And insofar as that's their argument, I think it's a little ridiculous. You can't even ask that question. Emailer says, someone please educate me on the blackface thing and why it's racist. She sounded sincere in her apology after learning the history of it, because I do not know why dressing up for Halloween as a black person, why it's racist to use dark makeup. Google minstrel shows. That's the history you need to educate yourself on. You know, and if you're not aware of that history, you should be aware of it. You know, it's a part of our ugly history. And listen, I'm not big on jumping on people who inadvertently do something that's offensive, right? To me, there's a very big difference between doing something that's maybe just a little insensitive and you're doing it inadvertently and just being an actual racist. A lot of people don't draw that distinction, and I think that's unfortunate. But that's where we're at. Another emailer says, when my son was younger, his favorite football player was Troy Polamalu. He dressed up as him and had the big hair, and I put bronzer on his face. So was that racist? And what do you think? Was that kid racist, Kyle? Dressing up as Troy Polamalu?
I don't think the kid is racist. I don't think they had racist intentions in doing so. But it is kind of tone deaf to do that.
I think so. I would not do that with my kid. And I say this, I don't want to be insulting, you listener out there who did this. I don't think you're racist for doing it. But that's a hurtful part of our history. And I think that if you're going to do something, you got to be cognizant of how people of color are going to respond to that. You know, and I am not a politically correct person, but that sort of thing still exists. They look at that and they see a certain thing. They perceive a certain thing. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being sensitive to that. But I also don't think there's anything wrong with even having the discussion about why it's wrong. Scott emails. He goes, what about the uproar at the Minnesota State Fair this fall over the tribute band Hairball for doing a Prince tribute in what I would call makeup? What should they do? Not pay tribute to one of Minnesota's most notable musicians? Remember, it was a tribute. Hairball does not mock. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, I think the intent should matter. The intent should matter. Let's see. We got a caller from Matt. Go ahead, Matt. What's up?
Hey, Rob. You just said the phrase I was gonna reference. Intent has to matter. If intent doesn't matter, then look at all the things that we go along with that you have to reconsider. I mean, even extending out to foreign policy. I mean, if intent doesn't matter, any collateral damage to any foreign act has to be taken into consideration. Then you're also putting the Israelis and the Palestinians, you know, a suicide bomber or anything that happens in those contexts, take a whole new view. Intent has to matter with what happens. Otherwise, everything becomes the same.
Yeah. I don't like, if one of my kids asked to dress up as a person of color for Halloween, and I would not say yes to that, because there are problems with that that are rooted in our country's dark history. So I would, my personal decision would say no. I would like to get to a place where maybe we could do that. You know, I have no problems with, you know, children of color or people of color dressing up as traditionally white characters or white people, right? If somebody, if an African American kid wants to dress up as Superman, who is traditionally, as originally written, was a white man, I don't have any problem with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I'd like to get to a place where all of this is less fraught. So I understand it's
some of this. It's just a matter of having self-awareness of what's going on,
sure,
in the culture,
right,
today.
Yeah,
I mean, some things just that might have been okay has become, for whatever reason, not okay. You just have
But to me, if your intent is positive, right? Like I intended to do something positive, not to perpetrate some insulting stereotype or whatever, then what you have committed is not an act of racism or bigotry. You've committed a faux pas, right?
Well, here's something too, though, that I think we saw, whether it was from the Sue nickname controversy or the Colin Kaepernick taking a knee. Oftentimes, if you have to tell people it's not offensive, there might be a good indication that it is in some way offensive. We can say that we aren't insulting Native Americans by the Sioux nickname, but many were. You can say that, hey, we're not insulting.
Although I would point out,
veterans or anything like that, but many people took it that way.
The one time Native Americans were allowed to vote on the nickname, they voted overwhelmingly for it. So who was telling who was offensive? You know, I mean,
there are people that were. So
yeah, no, fair enough, Matt. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Candidate for Cass County Sheriff Jesse Johnner is going to be on. We'll talk with him about his candidacy. This is the Rob Report, 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM. Don't go away. Welcome back. We're up Port 970 WDYM 93.1 FM, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDY.com. All right. Joining me now is a man. He is running to be the sheriff of Cass County, a job that's currently held by Cass County Sheriff Paul Laney. And as a matter of fact, Sheriff Laney endorses my guest now. His name's Jesse Johnner. Jesse, how are you?
Good. How are you, Rob?
Pretty good. Tell us, why do you want to be sheriff?
Well, there's a lot of reasons that I want to be sheriff, but most importantly, I guess it's something that I've been working towards most of my career. Sheriff Laney has given me a lot of opportunities to make advancements, or give me those opportunities to make advancements at the sheriff's office. I've worked as a corrections officer, a training officer, a patrol officer, a task force officer, detective, sergeant, and now my current role, captain, and I believe that all of those positions have added to my training, my experience, my education, and my leadership abilities. And so for those reasons, I feel like I'm the right person to lead the sheriff's office and move forward with the department.
What in your skill sets? I mean, obviously, Fargo, Cass County, it's our most densely populated part of our state. I mean, if you win this election, you would, just by dint of that, be one of the most prominent law enforcement officials in our state. What in your resume commends you? What makes you think that you'd be a good fit for that job?
Sure. Well, just kind of what I mentioned to you a little bit before there, Rob. So just to add a little bit to that. So I feel like, obviously, the sheriff of Cass County, just as you said, we have 211 officers deputies at our sheriff's office, and we are one of the larger agencies in the state. And so, mostly what I've done in my career is I started off in the jail. So I feel like the sheriff of Cass County, we need to have a good understanding of how the jail is run, because that's, you know, three quarters of our budget. From there, I spent time as a patrol officer for a very short period of time, or approximately 5 years, and then I was promoted to detective and was assigned to the Bureau of Criminal Investigation Narcotics Drug Task Force. And from there, I was promoted to sergeant and worked as both a training sergeant and patrol and investigative sergeant at our agency. And then, again, as I stated now, I was recently, a couple years ago, promoted to captain. And I currently oversee the entire field services division of the sheriff's office, which encompasses the patrol division, our training division, use of force, our school resource deputies, and I'm currently the assistant commander of Red River Valley SWAT team. And then approximately a year and a half ago, Attorney General Wayne Stengem appointed me to the North Dakota Post Board, and that is the Peace Officer Standard and Training Board, and that board oversees all of the training and licensing for officers in the state of North Dakota. So that's a little bit about my, I guess, my background. I've also had an opportunity through SWAT and through supervising our field services division to lead in several critical incidents. During the flood efforts in Fargo, I acted as forward operations commander for our rescue efforts, both in 2009 and 2010. And then during the Dakota Access Pipeline protests, I was asked to assist in planning a lot of our tactical operations out there and then executing those, sometimes commanding approximately, 250 to 300 officers in rapidly evolving situations out there. So I feel like all of those, and then, obviously my education and training that I received at the office also, I feel makes me a very good candidate for the position.
What could be better at the Sheriff's Department in Cass County? And I ask that question knowing, I mean, obviously, the current sheriff has endorsed you. He wants you, and I imagine you have fond feelings, and you obviously see Sheriff Laney in a positive light, as do I, by the way. But just from the perspective that nothing is ever perfect and things can always be improved, what would you improve at the Cass County Sheriff's Department?
Sure, and that's a very good question, Rob. We can always get better, of course, and Sheriff Laney has done an excellent job to this point at the Cass County Sheriff's Office. He's brought us to a high level, and sometimes we've been referred to as a role model agency, and so obviously we want to keep moving forward. I think there's some things that we could add to what we're already doing. And again, I'm not the type of person that's going to come and say, this is what I'm going to do if I get sheriff. I'm already working as a captain in the field services division. So he gives us the vision, and I move those things forward. But me taking over as sheriff, the things that I'd like to expand on are community relations out in the smaller communities. I feel that we may not be getting out of our cars as much as I would like us to. And what I mean by that is, we have an opportunity at the sheriff's office because of our call volume to develop relationships with the smaller communities and get out and visit with citizens. And through doing that, we learn who in those smaller communities are causing the problems or committing the criminal activities. And by our deputies getting out of the cars and building those relationships, we can work to curb some of those criminal activities. Some other things that I'd like to expand on is I want to expand on our technology. I think that, as technology changes, criminals use that technology to enhance their criminal activities, such things as going on the dark web and using computers to lure people for human trafficking and things like that. And I think that we could get a little bit better at training our deputies on technology, and then also purchasing potentially some of those items to assist us in our investigation. So I think those are some of the pieces that I'd like to expand on. Of course, training. I think that right now, obviously, addiction issues are big. I think that we can potentially help curb some of those addiction problems through our jail and by adding some additional programs than what we already have there right now. I feel like right now we have some really good programs in the jail, but I'd be looking at ways to also expand on those. And then, I also think that mental health issues are a big thing right now, and I think that we need to continue training our deputies on how to respond to individuals who have mental health issues. So all those, I think, are ways that we can expand on what we're already doing and become a better agency.
We have a caller on the line. John, go ahead. What's up?
Well, I'll make it real short, but having met Jesse, I've got a quick story to share at the end here. But having talked to him, I'll tell you what, he has just solid core values. I mean, the guy is a stellar guy to talk to. And you look at his past background, you know, with the Sheriff's Department, and it, to me, he's almost overqualified. If there was a position higher than sheriff, I would think he'd be qualified for that. But, you know, one of my personal experiences in dealing with him was on a cold winter's day here last year while the temperature was sub-zero and the snow was building up. I had a delivery to make of a life-size man-weight training dummy to the sheriff's office. It was him and one other deputy that were on duty in the building that day because it was a holiday. And one deputy was shoveling, and Jesse took the heavy end of the dummy, and up over the snowbank we went. Now, to me, if that isn't as hands-on an officer as you'd ever meet in your lifetime, I don't know what else to tell you. You know, Jesse, you're a great guy, and we're hoping you're going to be our next sheriff.
And John, yeah, Jesse, would you like to comment on how Rob?
I do remember that day.
So. Yeah, well, Jesse, John, thanks for the call. I suppose I could let you talk about how much you agree with John's compliments there, but I think they probably speak for themselves. Let me ask you this question. You do have an opponent in this race. Mm-hmm. His name is Mike, and I apologize because I don't listen to things so much as I read things. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Is it? It's K-J-E-R-A, and I apologize. I mean this no slight. How do you pronounce his last name? Maybe.
Jera.
Somebody help. Jera. Okay.
Mike Jera.
Mike Jera, there we go. He's your opponent. Why you and not him? Why should you run for this? Why should you win this election and not him?
Sure. So, well, for one, I've my whole career has been at the sheriff's office, so I understand the agency inside and out. And like I've mentioned, I worked my way up through the ranks at the sheriff's office, and I've spent time in all the different facets of law enforcement, whether it be patrol, corrections, a narcotics investigation. Or narcotics investigator, excuse me. One thing that I didn't mention is that I also supervise the Metro Area Street Crimes Unit. And so I have experience in all facets of law enforcement. I've had the opportunity to work on joint task forces with other agencies. So I know the importance of working collaboratively to work together to curb criminal activity. I have a good understanding of the agency. And I think basically my leadership, I've had the opportunity to not only work in those facets, but I've also had the opportunity to command and supervise in all of those facets and be a leader in all of those facets. So I think that's what definitely separates us in reference to the position.
Now, how about statewide? I mean, obviously, and again, Cass County, you know, just by dint of being the largest, that's a prominent position, you know, so that's a powerful voice you come with. Statewide, I mean, particularly at the legislature, which sort of initiatives would you push for there?
Sure. Again, I think that, you know, we've already been doing a pretty good job pushing some stuff out there as far as our justice reinvention, reinvestment stuff into the correctional facility. And I think I definitely want to continue to do that and work towards some more of those programs, as I was mentioning before. One important thing to me is that being sheriff, you work very closely with the people of Cass County, and because it is an elected position, you listen to the voices of the citizens, and then you bring those concerns to the legislature, whether it be law changes or whatever, and work on those things. So I think, correctional issues, I think that we need to address some mental health issues and then also some addiction issues. So I think all stuff on those lines are really important to me right now. Obviously, safety, public safety is always going to be huge for me. That's going to be our number one concern. But as you know, that encompasses a lot of different avenues. And one thing that I'm really big on and currently doing right now is I've been, since last year in 2017 in June, I started going around to our local EMS out in the county, whether it be fire departments or ambulance services, and teaching active shooter response, because I'm an instructor for that. And basically what I've been doing through that is trying to get them on the same page with us and how we can respond collaboratively to, you know, reduce injuries or possibly even death to our people out in the county. So I think that I'd also like to continue to work towards school safety and citizen safety, critical incident safety out at the legislative level as well.
Well, John, or excuse me, Jesse, we better let you go so you can get that phone call. We're out of time. That's Jesse Johnner. He's running for Cass County Sheriff. He has current Sheriff Paul Laney's endorsement. Thanks for your time, Jesse. Appreciate it. This is the Rob Report, 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM. We'll wrap things up right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. Rob Report, 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM. I just want to hit on one story out of the Senate race. A post I did yesterday. It's about a gentleman by the name of Lynn Oz. He is a World War II veteran. He's a Minot resident. I know the Oz family well. Last year, he was awarded the Legion of Honor from France for his service in World War II. I mean, it's which, by the way, is an amazing story in and of itself. I don't have time to get into here, but you should look it up because it's pretty cool. Anyway, when he was given that award, the congressional delegation was there. John Hoeven, Congressman Kramer, Senator Heitkamp, as is befitting. I mean, that's a bipartisan thing. Anyway, this week, Senator Heitkamp has been on, she's kind of made the focus of her Senate campaign this week, her work for veterans. And as part of that, she posted a link to the story about Lynn Oz and kind of bragged about her involvement in that awards ceremony. Now, Lynn Oz is a Republican. His family's Republicans. He supports Kevin Kramer. They contacted Heitkamp's campaign, told him to take the image down. His family also contacted me. This is what they wrote. They said, Lynn is not happy that Heidi did this. We have posted a comment requesting that it be taken down. That's what David Oz, Lynn's son, told me in an email. He continued, Lynn wants to make it clear that no one from the Heitkamp campaign contacted him to ask for permission for this, and he does not want it to be viewed as an endorsement of her campaign. Now, that's fair. Now, maybe you like Heidi Heitkamp and you think Lynn Oz is being a little silly here, but it's his image. It is his story, his record, his service in World War II. If he doesn't want that to be part of Heitkamp's messaging about her work for veterans, then it shouldn't be. And I would expect that the campaign would just take it down. Now, ultimately, after it made national news, that today, this morning, Fox News picked up my story. I requested comment from the Heitkamp campaign or Heitkamp staff. As usual, I didn't receive anything back. But Fox News picked it up, and they got a comment from Heitkamp's people. And listen to this. Because they're going after Lynn Oz, the World War II veteran, and didn't want his image used. This is what they wrote. Or this is what they said. I quote, "This story is wrong and is gutter politics at its worst. A link to a local news article was posted on Senator Heitkamp's Senate Facebook page about a ceremony she participated in last year for a World War II veteran to highlight a recognition he earned. An individual photo was not posted. The way social media works is that if you post a link to an article, the photo in the article also shows up in the post. Let's talk about facts rather than distortions or political games. We took the post of the article down after the veteran's son asked us to via Facebook," said Abby McDonough, Heitkamp's U.S. Senate Communications Director. In fact, at the event, Mr. Oz joked with Senator Heitkamp that he liked her, but he isn't going to vote for her. They both shared a laugh, and she retold the story at the event. In North Dakota, you can still recognize the service of an honorable man from a different political party without playing politics. Senator Heitkamp will continue to work to make sure all veterans have support, resources, blah, 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 blah. I don't understand why this is gutter politics. If Lynn Oz didn't want his image used in the Facebook post, then don't use it. And I can tell you it was hours after they contacted Senator Heitkamp. It wasn't until after I posted about it and after they started making national media attention that they finally took the post down. If Lynn Oz, a World War II veteran, and his service in World War II, if he doesn't want that to be part of Senator Heidi Heitkamp's campaign, then it shouldn't be. And by the way, Senator Heitkamp's only involvement in any of that is that she was one of our three members of the delegation who showed up at the ceremony. Right? It wasn't her award. It wasn't her event. She has no place to brag about it. That was Lynn Oz's event. And if he didn't want that used in her campaign, then it shouldn't have been. And attacking him for gutter politics, for wanting to take it down, is shameful, Senator Heitkamp. All right. Jay Thomas Show straight ahead. Stay tuned for that. You can always catch me here 12 to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday on 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's anythingblog.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again.